When we talk about Shmiras Shabbos, we look at a pasuk in Parshas Kisisa, where the Torah there describes what is it that we're supposed to be doing on Shabbos. And there the Torah tells us, "Va'ata daber al b'nei Yisrael lemar acha shabsosai tishmoru ki osi b'niu b'neichem l'doro seichem." We are supposed to observe the Shabbos, and that is considered to be an os. It's considered to be a sign. L'das ki ani Hashem mikadoshchem. We have the same kind of phrase, the same terminology when we say about Shmiras Shabbos. It's v'shamru b'nei Yisrael es haShabbos. So what is this idea of Shmira? What does it mean to guard? What are we supposed to be doing? How do we practically observe that? So the Arachaim HaKadosh there in Parshas Kisisa wonders what exactly the Torah meant when it said, Vishamru v'nei Yisrael es haShabbos. Or here, when it says, Eshab sosai tishmoru. What does it mean to be a Shomer Shabbos? So we conventionally say it as, well, a Shomer Shabbos is somebody who observes Shabbos, but it must be something more than that. So the Arachaim HaKadosh explains as follows. He takes us to a pasuk in Sefer Bereishis, where the Torah says that Yosef and his brothers were having this very uncomfortable relationship, and Yaakov Avinu is well aware of what's going on, and we're told in the parsha, "V'aviv shamar es hadavar." What does it mean, "V'aviv shamar es hadavar"? It means his father anticipated, writes the Arachaim HaKadosh, it means, Mamtin umitzape masayavu. He has Yosef HaTzadik telling all of his dreams, and Yaakov Avinu is just sitting there and waiting. He wasn't watching, he wasn't being shomer as a guard, but he was waiting. He was mitzape masayavu. When are these dreams going to actually come true? V'akavana bazeh, and that is what the Torah means when it says that we have an expectation to be shomer Shabbos. What does it mean to be a shomer Shabbos? Being a shomer Shabbos means somebody who is v'aviv shamaras hadavar, somebody who's willing to anticipate and look forward to this exciting opportunity that Shabbos brings all of us, with a yearning, with a passion, with a longing. That's what it means to be a Shomer Shabbos, which is so counterintuitive. It means you can have someone who goes through Shabbos every week of their life, who is careful to do all the mitzvahs that they're supposed to stay away from all the los haseis that they're not supposed to do, and yet the person has never been Shomer Shabbos in their life experience. The Shomer Shabbos means a person who is mamtin umetzape masayavo, who is really looking forward and anticipating for when this is going to happen. And I was thinking a lot about it when we talk about karbanos. So the pasuk says, "Sabbos v'nei Yisrael v'amarta lehem es karbani lachmi le'ishai." Maybe perhaps an additional level of meaning to that pasuk is, not only do we have an obligation to make sure and be vigilant over the fact that the karbanos are going to be offered, but beyond that, it's we should have an anticipation, a yearning to be involved in avodas hakarbanos. That is something that is so important to all of us. We refer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu as the Shomer Yisrael. Obviously, it means on a face value that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the one who looks after the Jewish people, but beyond that, it means also that he looks forward to the great things that are coming to the Jewish people as well, and that's what it means to be a Shomer Shabbos. So the Bali Musar talk about the following scenario, and it gives us a picture, as they say, of what the onset of Shabbos should or perhaps should not look like in all of our experiences. So they say the following. Imagine your elderly parents, they're in their upper 80s. I guess it's not so old. They're in their upper 90s, right? So your elderly parents call you on the phone, they inform you that they plan to come to you for Shabbos. Now, they don't live in your community, and they're going to have to take a Long Island Railroad to get to you. They're going to have to take the subway. So they get out, and they don't have cell phones, they don't have anything, so they're looking around as they come out of the train station, looking to see, is my son here? I called and I'm coming for Shabbos. I told them which train I'm taking. Is he here to pick me up? And they're looking around, they don't see anybody who looks familiar. So they ask somebody who's standing next to them, do you know how to use a cellular telephone? My father still calls it a cellular telephone. You know how to use a cellular telephone? So the person says, yeah, sure, would you like to borrow it? Yeah, sure, let me look out. Takes out his Rolodex, starts finding his son's phone number, calls him up and says, I'm in the train station. Is anybody here? He says, I forgot all about it. I can't believe it. I totally forgot. I was so busy at work. I'm home already. I'm showering, I'm getting ready, but I completely forgot that you were coming. I'm so sorry. Maybe just get in the taxi and take the Uber or the taxi to my house. Okay. They get in the Uber, get in the taxi, and they come to that home, and they're waiting outside. Nobody's answering the door. They finally start screaming up through the windows, and the child screams out from the bathroom as he's getting himself ready for Shabbos, and he says, Shabbos is in another hour. Give me a couple of minutes. I'm getting ready. By the time Shabbos comes, we'll let you in. I mean, what kind of way is that to deal with our parents or to deal with any guest that we're having? And it sort of gives them the feeling that they are unwanted. It gives them the feeling that they are really unwelcome in our home. And the Baalei Musar say that this is really the experience that goes on sometimes on Erev Shabbos. We are well aware of the fact that Shabbos is going to be entering our home every single week. And it's not a surprise to us. We know what time, and we know how, and we know when. And yet, sometimes when Shabbos comes, we are lacking that sense of anticipation. And we don't have that appreciation for what Shabbos is. And it almost gives Shabbos the sense as if Shabbos is unwelcome in my home. As if we have other things that are more important to us than ushering in our guest, which is the Shabbos itself. There are many who have the custom that on Erev Shabbos, they recite Shir HaShirim. What is that all about? Why do they say Shir HaShirim? So the answer is because, perhaps the reason why is because in Shir HaShirim, we talk about Yishakeni Minishikos Pinu. We talk about the kiss, the embrace that we have between ourselves and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's really what happens when we have our parents come to us for Shabbos. The first thing we do is we kiss, we embrace, we show them how much we warmly welcome them into our home. And we want them to spend time in our home. We want them to feel comfortable. And that is really the feeling that we're trying to engender, if it's done right, to be Shomer Shabbos. A Shomer Shabbos doesn't just mean somebody who makes sure not to violate the Lo Saseh of Shabbos, but rather somebody who makes sure that Shabbos is something that I anticipate, Shabbos is something that I look forward to, and Shabbos is something that I long for in the experience of my week as well. So obviously, all areas of halacha are extremely enjoyable. You know, I always think about it. When I was younger, so when I learned halacha, at least in grade school, so I always felt it was very dry. Anyone share that experience with me? Yeah. It's such a tragedy. I don't think halacha is taught properly. Halacha is so exciting. Halacha is cutting edge. Halacha is so enjoyable. It just depends how you learn it. If you're just reading through a book, reading through the Mishnah Berurah, or reading, I don't mean to denigrate the Mishnah Berurah, but if you're not really familiar with the context of where the Mishnah Berurah came from, and how it developed to come to where it is then it's very dry. You just keep reading this line, another line, but you don't really understand and appreciate how it came to the point where it is today, and how it's relevant in our situation. Halacha is extremely exciting, and it's very important, but Hilchos Shabbos in particular is so critically important for us because it's so relevant every Shabbos of our lives. Other areas of halacha sometimes come up, sometimes don't, sometimes we encounter them and other times we don't, but Hilchos Shabbos is something that we really experience every week and something that we need to know. There's no better way to spend and celebrate Shabbos than by learning and understanding all of the very intricate halachos that are going to be relevant to all of us. So for this week, let's begin with reawakening our appreciation for what Shabbos could and should be in our experience. So let's look at what Rav Soloveitchik writes here. Look at the page that I gave out. Soloveitchik has a beautiful, very moving and eloquent description of what Shabbos was like for him. So he writes as follows. It's in number one here on the page. As a child, I used to brood for hours over the notion of Hamavdil ben Kodesh leKodesh. Two sanctities, one of the Shabbos and the other of the holiday. I like them both. He didn't have a preference, Shabbos or Yom Tov. Both of them are excellent. Both of them are amazing. I cherished every spark of holiness. I hated the everyday, the gray, the routine, the workday, and the dreariness. So Shabbos was an extra special experience. And this really is something that we all have the opportunity to look forward to. Shabbos is something that really pulls us out of all that's going on during the week and gives us a chance to think differently, to see differently. But beyond that, Rav Soloveitchik writes in a different place, really something that I think frames what Shabbos can be for all of us. So he writes as follows. And he brings us to the dreams of Yosef. We mentioned before, the Aruch Haim HaKadosh says, V'aviv shamaras hadavar, which means Yosef had dreams. And Yaakov Avinu, his father, was waiting. He was mamtin u'metzapeh. He was looking around to see what's going to be with my son. He was excitedly anticipating what the outcome was going to be. So let's go back to the dreams again. So we know Yosef comes to his brothers. In the end, it was really the cause of great antagonism between the family members. And they basically looked at their brother and said, do you think you're better than all of us? Do you think you're greater than our father, than our mother? Everyone's going to bow down to you. I mean, this doesn't make any sense. But what exactly were the dreams? So Yosef has one dream, which is that he has achadasar kochavim, right? He has a shemesh, v'yareach, a sun and a moon, and he has a whole bunch of stars that are bowing down in the middle. Then he has another dream. And the other dream was all about the stalks of wheat. And he has bundles of wheat, bundles of grain and produce, and each one is obviously representing a different member of the family, and all of them were mishtachavim li. All of them were bowing down to Yosef. Now the brothers say, you're so egocentric, you're so self-centered, all you think about is yourself all day, and that's why when you go to sleep at night, all you dream about is yourself as well. So this caused a major rift between one part of the family and the other, but we know and we're familiar with those two dreams. So let's read how Rav Soloveitchik takes a very important message from what those dreams are all about. It was not just an arbitrary idea that Yosef happened to have dreamt about this idea or that idea. There was something very deep and very profound behind the dreams that he had. So he writes as follows. I am not a dream interpreter. But Yosef, as we know, had two visions, he says. One was of material economic power, of prosperity, of opulence, and that vision came true 100%. Yosef had a dream that was all about wheat, all about produce, all about money. But the other dream apparently revolved around spiritual greatness, heavenly sweep and a heavenly grandeur. It's a beautiful perspective to have. You know, I've read about those dreams every year of my life, and I've never thought about it this way. One of them was all about gashmias, one of them was all about our parnasa, all about food and produce and all of that, which is an important part of our lives. And the other dream was all about interesting ideas that have to do with the heavens that are beyond just the economic realm in our lives. Yosef wanted to be powerful in a political sense. He wanted to attain wealth and prosperity, to be respected by the people because of his power, feared by the people because of his might, but he also wanted to be great spiritually. Yosef wanted both. He wanted to be loved by the people, to be revered by the people because of the greatness of his wisdom and his kindness. And we too have met different kinds of people in our lives. There are some people who want to be influential by the power that they have, by the fact that they have the ability to sustain everybody, to take care of everything, to always be the ones who are so charitable and giving, and that's wonderful. There are others who have different aspirations, who want to be influential by the wisdom that they have, by the wisdom that they give over and impart to others, by that which they share, by that which they infuse into the lives of other people. These are the two kinds of dreams. Now, as for celibation, can one person combine both of these qualities? Can a person be living both dreams at the same time, simultaneously? Am I able to have my head as being the person who is extremely successful in my profession, in my business, in my wealth, and everything else, while at the same time also being extremely successful spiritually and gaining the respect of people that way as well? Can one person combine both qualities? Can one person fulfill both dreams? The dream of the sheaves, of economic and military power, and also the dream of spiritual greatness, of moral heights, and of communion with Hashem. Yosef, as an executive, paid attention to the hard facts of life. He organized the storage of the food during the 7 years of prosperity. He was successful. In the end, everything he had thought about, everything he had dreamt about came true. He divided and then removed the peasants from the land. Could he at the same time be a dreamer, a visionary, and a spiritual leader loved by the people? Can we actually live a life that excels in both areas? That's the question. And the answer, he writes, is, apparently Yosef thought that he could combine both. And this is the meaning of the Ksonas Pasim. What does it mean that he had a Ksonas Pasim which was made of so many different colors? Not monochromatic, not monotonous color. If there are many colors, there are many contradictions. Yes, you're going to have many clashes in both of these aspirations in your life. They're not always going to go hand in hand. Put it simply, if a person wants to be extremely successful in business, sometimes that will require me to go to non-kosher establishments, to be together with co-workers, but I'm unable to do that. And that's a clash of my two values. That's as soon as possible. That's what it means, to be multicolored, to be multifaceted, to have many different portions of who the essence of me actually is. And that is what Yosef was struggling to try to figure out. If there are many colors, there are many contradictions. Colors clash with one another, and Yosef was the synthesis of number one, alumos, which was the produce, and the wheat, which really highlighted all of the great success that he wanted to have in all of his prosperity. But at the same time, he had a vision of heavenly bodies, which was always at the forefront of his mind at the same time. He was a complete person because he was made up of so many different contradictory parts. But Rav Soloveitchik suggests that Yosef HaTzadik was not unique in this regard. Because this really is the life of a Jew. Let's look at the next paragraph. The Jews throughout history have imitated Yosef. We also have two visions. The Jew is a merchant. You look around at the history of the Jewish people were always in business. Always. In many generations, the Jews were successful in business. In fact, there's a discussion in Maseches Avodah Zarah about whether a Jew is allowed to be involved in certain businesses. And the Rabbeinu Tam, the other Rishonim discuss, it came to a time in history where there were money-making businesses that were problematic, al pi halacha. And the Rishonim had to come up with different kinds of loopholes to figure out how a Jew can still make a parnasa even though he's keeping the halacha. But this was always a struggle. But the Jews did have the ability to be good merchants, skillful in their trade, he says, to be innovative and successful business people. I looked this morning, I've heard this many times, that it's disproportionate the amount of Jews that have won Nobel Awards in the world. You know that? You know how many people have won Nobel Awards? 900 people have been awarded Nobel Awards. 20% of them are Jews. That should be very surprising. The Jews are not 20% of the world population. Not even close. Not even close to being close. And yet 20% of Nobel Awards have been Jews. And they've contributed and made society very different than it was before they got there. So we've always been into this idea of being successful financially, of being successful and being integrated into the betterment of our world. The Jew is a good merchant and he is skillful in his trade. The Jew dreams of sheaves, otherwise they could not have survived. At the same time, the Jew, the small merchant, the grocer, the peddler would come home for Shabbos. I knew such people in my childhood. The same Jew, sometimes in rags, had another dream. Not of alamos, but not of dollars and cents, of rubles and kopecks, but of something else. Of a sun, a moon, and 11 stars. Of spiritual greatness. He was a great spiritual personality. And that is what Shabbos is supposed to be for all of us. It's our ability to live life being our own Yosef, to live both dreams. During the week, we have Sheishes Yimei Amasa, where we try to successfully engage in the opportunities that this world gives us, while at the same time on Shabbos, we have the experience of pulling back a little bit and just appreciating what it means to be enveloped and embraced by that other dream that we have, which is so much an aspiration of who the Jewish people are. It really brings me back to Parshas Bereishis, where the Torah says that the instruction that was given to Adam HaRishon was, "Kru u'revu u'milu es ha'aretz v'kibshuha." Some suggest what that means is, have children, u'milu es ha'aretz, and fill up the world and be around. V'kibshuha means, and take it over, and make contributions, be involved. It's what the Jews always aspire toward. It's what we were supposed to be looking at and thinking about for our own lives. But living that synthesis of Yosef HaTzadik, of both of those dreams at the same time, is really what our goal needs to be. Particularly when we speak to a group of women, Rav Soloveitchik, in yet a third essay, expresses what he believes is the central role that a woman plays for an entire family. And I think it's so important. And this perspective is particularly relevant in our generation. I'll tell you why. We are living in the info age. We can look up anything on the internet, and we can educate ourselves, and we can make it as if we know everything. And never has there been so much Torah learning in the history of the world. I really believe that to be the case. And it's wonderful. And we have so many apps, and so many shiurim, and so many opportunities, and so many different venues that we are granted to be able to engage in Talmud Torah. However, the Torah life is made up of more than just that. There are other very critical and significant components that we need to think about as well when we engage in Talmud Torah, when we engage in a Jewish experience of life. And that's what I think is very important here. And in a third place, he writes, it's in his book, Family Redeemed. He says as follows. Everyone following? We're good? We're up to number three? Is there a cup up there by any chance?
Yeah.
Yeah? Thank you very much. So he writes as follows. I'm going to make sure you don't miss anything. Thank you. Thank you very much. There is a distinction between mother and father's mission. So every family is made up of a mother and a father. But he says, or families used to be, yes, made up of mothers and fathers. There is a distinction between mother and father's mission within the covenantal community. There are different roles that mothers and fathers play in the development of a Jewish family. Since they represent two different approaches, father's teaching is basically of intellectual nature. You ever watch when a child is screaming uncontrollably, how the father takes care of that child and how the mother takes care of that child? So what's the difference? They both love the child. It's not like, well, sometimes not. But the assumption is that the father and the mother both love the child equally, or they both have a tremendous, abounding love for this child. So why is it that the mother sometimes does a much better job at soothing the child than the father? What's the reason? Because the father starts using his intellect to try to talk to the child. Well, why are you screaming? I don't understand. Why are you upset? Oh, he got more than you. You got more than them. Oh, you're upset about this. You're upset. The kid is not interested in reasoning with you. Stop using your intellect so much. Give the kid a little bit of warmth and make them understand that you love them and you appreciate the struggle that they're having. And stop philosophizing about what's happening. Just be nice. Just be there. And that really is the nature of men. That sometimes they're just very intellectual. I say to young Hassanim all the time. So sometimes they don't get it. You know, they talk to me. I was talking to my wife. We just got married and we were discussing this, discussing that. I said, you don't understand. Your wife is not interested in having that discussion with you. The reason why she's frustrated is because you don't get it. It's just simple like that. You just simply don't get it. She's not interested in having an intellectual conversation. Right now, all she wants to do is a hug. It's about it. And if that's what you can bring yourself to do, then you're a good husband. If you can't figure out how to do that and give that to your wife, you're awful. You don't know what marriage is about. And that sometimes just highlights the difference that we have between men and women. They're very different, and they think differently, and they react and respond differently as well. So he writes as follows. There's a distinction between the role of a father and the role of a mother. A father's teaching is basically of an intellectual nature. Judaism is to a great extent an intellectual discipline, a method, a system of thought, a hierarchy of values. As we know, without the Torah, without studying, we are called the Am HaSefer. We are called the people of the book. What does it mean to be the people of the book? It means studying and intellect is something that is extremely important to all of us. It's a value that we cherish. It's something that we really uphold in our community. In order to be acquainted with all these aspects, one must study, comprehend, acquire knowledge, and be familiar at least with the basic principles. Let me confide, it is not too easy a task. A person can learn Torah their entire life, but yet, we know that the Torah is so expansive. There is so much to master, so much to study, and so much to know. So this is something that is difficult. The teaching must be strict, exact, and conscientious. If the father cannot accomplish it by himself, he must see to it that his child obtains the necessary instruction. It's the obligation of a father to educate his children and to teach them the Derech HaTorah and all the mitzvahs that they need to be aware of throughout the experience of their lives. However, he writes, and this is a big however, Judaism is not only an intellectual tradition, but it is an experiential one as well. The Jew not only observe, but experience the Shabbos. The Jew experienced Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. He did not only recite prayers on those days. The Seder was not just a ceremonial, but a great experiential event. There is beauty, grandeur, warmth, and tenderness to Judaism. All these qualities cannot be described in cognitive terms. One may behold them, one may feel them, one may sense them. It is impossible to provide one with a formal training in the experiential realm. Experiences are communicated not through the word, but through steady contact, through association, through osmosis, through a tear or a smile, through dreamy eyes and soft melody, through the silence at twilight, and through the recital of Shema. You cannot get the experience of Judaism from Google or from Bar Ilan or Rotzer HaChachma or any of the online forums. That can educate you. That can give you, perhaps, the intellect that you might be lacking. It can give you, maybe point you in a direction of where you should be looking to find the answer to one of your questions, but that's not going to give you the experience of what it means to be involved in a Jewish life. This is why the Gemara says that Shimush Tamid HaChachamim is so important. The Gemara says, Gadol Shimusha Yoser Milimuda. Shimush Tamid HaChachamim means having the opportunity to really bask in the glory of a Talmud Chacham, of a great person, having the opportunity to see what their experience of Jewish life really is. It's not only about their intellect. It's not only about asking them questions. It's about really having an understanding of how they experience all of life. Gadol shimusha yoser milimuda. Sometimes that is even more profoundly impactful than the limud itself. And that's why it's important to me that we have the opportunity that we're going to have next week. I think we can listen to a million shiurim online, and we can have many people who we look up to, and we can have many great aspirations in life, and who we want to be like, and who we want to follow, and who we want to accept as our teacher. But at the same time, it's important for us to be exposed every so often to real greatness, to have an opportunity to see what does it really mean to live life totally differently, to have the experience. And that, says Rav Soloveitchik, is so much of what a mother provides to her children. A father has an obligation to educate his children. A mother has an obligation, of course she shares in that obligation, but also she has the obligation to give her children the experiential component of what Judaism is all about. And that is so critical for all of us. So let's look at the last few lines here. All this to be found in the maternal domain. The mother creates the mood. She is the artist who is responsible for the magnificence and beauty. She tells the child of the great romance of Judaism. She somehow communicates to him the tremor, the heartbeat of Judaism, while playing, singing, laughing, and crying. Think about how many people you know that only observe Judaism but do not experience it. And in the opposite direction as well. How many people you know that experience Judaism but do not observe it? What I mean by that is you can watch people who are jumping up and down and becoming very infatuated by it, by a lot of nice music and singing, and it really draws us closer. But what does it draw us closer to? Does it make us feel more passionate about observing the Torah and mitzvahs? If not, then of what value is it? What's it drawing us closer to? What do we stand for other than the Torah and mitzvahs? On the other hand, you have some people who are so set on the observance that they're really not experiencing at all. You can have a person who comes to shul, and they're there every day, and they're there on time, and they're paying attention, and yet they're just not there. They're not experiencing it. Somebody came over to me. We have in our shul, the Gabbayim, make an announcement before every minyan. If anyone has a cell phone, please turn it off or put it on silent. Somebody came over to me and he said, you know, yeah. Even if you were just texting your friends, it's also okay. It's not a problem. Unless you want to run and get your charger or something.
Perfect.
It should be updated and well for next week. And we should be able to use it well. And talking about next week on Tuesday, if I could just ask that everyone come with a full skirt and a full shirt and a kavod haTorah to the Gadol Yisrael we're going to be meeting. I think it's not too much of an ask. And if I could just ask that, that would be very, very greatly appreciated. What was I talking about? So I said, now we have this announcement in our shul that if you have a cell phone, if you could turn it on silent or vibrate or turn it off. So this guy comes over to me and he says, you know, I don't really understand. I come to shul every day. I sit in my corner. I do my thing. I never talk to anybody. I'm there on time. I'm there from the beginning till the end. What does it bother you? I'm sitting there. In between when I finish my quiet from Esrei and I begin Chazaras HaShatz, what does it bother you that I'm scrolling through my emails? What's your problem? I'm not disturbing anybody else. So it's a very good question. Very good question. So what's the answer? So the answer is as follows. I'm assuming everybody here has been to a wedding once in their lives? Okay. So you go to a wedding, there's a lot of downtime at a wedding. A lot of downtime at a wedding. This year that I'm giving to the next class was prepared at a wedding. That's how much downtime. This is 8 pages prepared at a wedding. Weddings have a lot of downtime. And that's with getting a bracha at the chuppah, so I have to like be there. But still, there is so much wasted time at a wedding. So, and by the way, if anyone, I'm not advocating that you should, but if anyone is interested in staying for the separate class, you're welcome to. Totally different topic from Shabbos usually, but if it's of interest to anybody, you're welcome to stay. It's going to be in this classroom as well. So, a lot of downtime. So what happens? What do most people do who don't come with a computer to a wedding hall? What do they do? They gossip. I'd say I'm not a gossip. So I pull my phone out, scrolling through my emails, catching up. Oh, I didn't respond to this text, to that person, to this thing. catching up on all the things that I didn't take care of, right? We've seen people do that, correct? And it's not just the weddings I go to, I assume, right? So, that being the case, imagine, sometimes you're at a chuppah, and of course, the people who know that they're being called up for brachas don't always sit in the front, I'm not sure why. So they call up someone for a bracha, and he starts shuffling through the back row, and he's pushing everybody over because he gets up there. My father always makes fun. You know, if you're going to be called up for a bracha, like, make sure you have nice shoes. You know, like, don't come up with those, like, half-broken soles and, like, your suit is all buckled. Like, you know, a little self-respect, a little bit. So anyway, so you have that person who's getting the bracha sitting all the way in the back. And it's going to take a couple of minutes, and of course, he's, like, 90 years old. So until he gets up there, and all the grandchildren are holding him, and the whole thing. It's a whole scene, right? So imagine if while this is going on, the chassan pulls out his phone and starts, like, you know, checking his emails. So why are you laughing? Why is he any different? It's rude. Who's it rude to? To the college, she's doing the same thing, right? So they're both addicted to their phones. So they're both waiting. There's some downtime here. They're not disturbing anybody. He pulls out his phone and starts checking his emails. She pulls out hers. Who are they offending? What's the problem? Why does everyone here instinctively laugh when you say such a thing? Because it's insane, that's why. It's a crazy thing to do. Why is it crazy? Because the whole reason everyone's here is to celebrate you. You are the main attraction. You're not a guest. You're not an outsider. There's no downtime for you. You are the main event. So you can't pull out your phone in the middle. That's what I told this person. I think that's what people miss when they come to die. They don't understand when there's downtime between my quiet Shmona Esrei and Chazaras HaShatz. It's not that, oh, you know, some downtime, let me pull out my phone and start scrolling. It means you don't understand that you are the main attraction of the tefillah. It's an experience between you and HaKadosh Baruch Hu when there is no downtime. There's no such thing. This is your chuppah. It's your wedding. And it would be totally and highly inappropriate for you to do anything else, even if you seem to be looking at a few seconds with nothing else to do. It's just not the right time or place for it. You know, imagine somebody would come to his child's wedding and he brings along a few books to read. You know what happens if during the pictures while they're gathering the whole family, he just walks up on the side and takes his time to read a book. It's just a strange thing to do. Why? What do you, I love to read. What's wrong? The answer is, yeah, there's a time and place for everything. This is not the time for it. It's not that you're offending anybody. It's just you're not in the experience. It shows that you believe that you're an outsider. We need to be in the experience in everything we do as Jews. And I thought maybe this is what it means when we ask our Kadosh Baruch Hu, Na'al Tishivenu Reikam Milfanecha. What does it mean? We asked her in the Yom Naran, Avinu Malkenu, Na'al Tishivenu Reikam Milfanecha. Don't allow us to come back empty. So, the simple understanding of that tefillah is, we're asking for so many different things. Make sure that you answer our requests. We don't want to come back empty. After all that we asked for, we don't want to come back and not have the things that we were requesting. But beyond that, maybe it means for ourselves. Na'al tishivenu reikam milfanecha. Don't allow me to come out empty from this uplifting experience. I spent a whole Yom Naran, and I went to Slichos every day, and I woke up early or stayed up late in the middle of the night to go to Slichos and to do all my thing and to stay in shul the whole day Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, but I can walk away from an entire experience like that completely reikam. Empty. With nothing. Because I didn't experience it. Because I don't understand what it is that I've just encountered, what I've just done. And that's what we ask our Kadosh Baruch Hu, Na'al Tishivenu Reikam Melefanecha. Don't allow us to go away empty from the uplifting experience that we're supposed to have as we engage in all of the religious experiences that our Kadosh Baruch Hu gives us the chance to do. One of the most famous essays of Rav Soloveitchik is the hesped that he gave for his Machatenus. And I think somebody has to be challenged with figuring out how to have an English word the equivalent of Machatenister. Anybody know what that is? There is none. That relationship somehow doesn't exist outside of the Jewish community. Right? Machatan. What?
The parents of your son.
What are the two parents? Yeah, the two parents call each other Machatan.
Yeah, parents.
Big question I have. Why they don't have peach snapple downstairs? Anyone else wondering that? Okay. And also why I can't get any money on my cash card to actually buy a drink. Okay, it's been 2 weeks. I'll figure it out. But it's interesting. Okay. So this is one of the most famous essays that he wrote about a tribute to the Rebbetzin of Tallinn. The Tallinn Rebbetzin was... Anybody know who that was? Anybody know who the current Tallinn Rebbe is? There are a few of them. One of them lives in Yerushalayim. Actually, if you're ever in Yerushalayim, you should go to the end. He speaks English. He is profoundly... That was no hard feelings, you know? He is profoundly insightful, speaks English, understands the community in America really, really well. He's a phenomenal personality. But there's a Tallinn Rebbe who lives here in Irvington. Anybody know who that is? Reb Meir Tversky. Reb Meir Tversky, Rosh Hashiva NYU, also is the Tallinn Rebbe. His father was the Tallinn Rebbe, Rabbi Yitzchak Tversky. And I guess after his father passed away, he became the official Tallinn Rebbe. I don't know what he does in that capacity. I'm not sure exactly what it entails. But he officially is. So Rav Soloveitchik was actually Rabbi Tversky's grandfather. Right? Rabbi Tversky's mother was Soloveitchik's daughter. She's still alive. So when Rabbi Tversky's grandmother passed away on the other side, so Rav Soloveitchik gave a hesped on his Mechutenus, on Mrs. Tversky, on the Tallinn Rebbe. So he wrote as follows. I admit that I am not able to define precisely the Masoretic role of the Jewish mother. And he very passionately describes what in his mind is the critical role of a Jewish mother, of a Jewish woman. And in particular, the example that he gives is when it comes to observing and experiencing Shabbos. So he draws from his own experience to bring out the point. Permit me to draw upon my own experiences. I used to have long conversations with my mother. In fact, it was a monologue rather than a dialogue. She talked and I happened to overhear. What did she talk about? I must use a halachic term in order to answer this question. She talked me'inyana diyoma. Me'inyana diyoma means she talked about relevant issues. I used to watch her arranging the house in honor of a holiday. I used to see her reciting the prayers. I used to watch her recite the Seder every Friday night, which is amazing, by the way. How many mothers do you know that actually are Mabur Seder every week? Can I be bold enough to ask anyone in this room's mother does the Parsha every week? My hand is not up either. My mother doesn't. That's amazing. So just like the picture that he gives of what a regular average Jewish mother is fascinating to me. So he says, she davens, okay, we've seen that. And she arranges the house in honor of the holiday. But then he says, she recites the Sedra every week on Friday night. I still remember the nostalgic tune. I learned from her very much. Most of all, I learned that Judaism expresses itself not only in the formal compliance with the law, but also in a living experience. She taught me that there is a flavor, a scent, and a warmth to mitzvos. I learned from her the most important thing in life, to feel the presence of the Almighty and the gentle pressure of His hand resting upon my frail shoulders. Without her teachings, which quite often were transmitted to me in silence, I would have grown up a soulless being, dry and incessant. That to me is an amazing statement. That is an absolutely amazing statement. He says in some other location that he learned most of Shas with his father. And everything he knows is from his father's home. And from all the great tzaddikim who used to be around him. And yet with all of that, he says, without my mother, without everything that she imparted to me, I would have grown up a soulless, dry, and insensitive person. That's amazing. That's amazing. Rav Soloveitchik, the great theologian, the great Talmud Chacham, the great Rosh Hashiva, says that without his mother, he would be nowhere. Not only because she gave birth to him, but also because his mother gave him so many critical and important values to what it means to live life as a Jew. The laws of Shabbos, for instance, he says, were passed on to me by my father. They are part of the Musar Avicha. The Shabbos as a living entity, as a queen, was revealed to me by my mother. It is part of Torah's Mecha. The fathers knew much about Shabbos, but the mothers lived the Shabbos. They experienced her presence. They perceived her beauty and splendor. The fathers taught generations how to observe Shabbos, while mothers taught generations how to greet Shabbos and how to enjoy her 24-hour presence. And that, I think, is a very powerful phenomenon that he describes of what Shabbos can and should be for all of us, but so much so that a woman has the ability to infuse that experience of Shabbos, experiential Judaism, not just the formal compliance of the Hilchos Shabbos, but also outside of that and way beyond that, is to understand what the experience of Shabbos really is all about for us. Let me just close with a medrash in Parshas Vayikra. The medrash tells us that Moshe barach min hasrara. Moshe Rabbeinu was anav mikal adam, asher al pnei ha'adama. Moshe Rabbeinu was extremely humble. Moshe Rabbeinu understood that his tafkid in life was to do what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted him to do. And yet, the Ribbono Shel Olam asked him to lead the Jewish people to take them out of Mitzrayim. The Medrash tells us, for 7 days, Moshe Rabbeinu is being misbakeach im HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He's fighting, he's arguing, he's challenging. It's not for me. I'm a kavad peh, I'm a kavad lashon, I have no charisma, I don't know how to speak. It's not for me. He insists that it's not for him. What happens in the end? Let's see. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, you know, I'd like you to be the leader of the Jewish people. I want you to go negotiate with Paro and take the Jewish people out of Mitzrayim. And he says, Be Hashem, shlach nabi yat tishlach. Lo ishtabar manochi. He says, no, you don't understand. I'm not a politician. I'm not a leader. I don't have these qualifications. I'm just not good at this. It's not for me. It doesn't suit me well. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Amar lo, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Chayecha sokhalele. Look, we can argue back and forth. I'm just telling you, in the end, you're going to go. So let's just cut out all the argument, and let's get on with the mission. Okay, Kivin Shehalach v'yamar, Moshe Rabbeinu accepts that which HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants him to do, and he says, Ko amar Hashem Elokei ha'ivrim. Amar oso harasha mi Hashem asher eshma b'kolo. Paro responds back to Moshe Rabbeinu. I think I'm interested in HaKadosh Baruch Hu? I don't care who he is. You're giving me messages from him? What does it matter to me? Amar Moshe, Moshe says, Var asisi shlichusi. Okay, I went to Paro, I negotiated with him, my job is done, I'm finished. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, no, yashav talach. You think you can retire? We're just getting started. You have many, many years of leadership ahead of you. This is just the first job that I've given you. And you have a lot more in store. The basso. In the end, HaKadosh Baruch Hu sends him this message, that message, this act of leadership, that act of leadership, everything in the end brings him to the point where Moshe Rabbeinu can say about himself, Hotziyami Mitzrayim, Hara Lahem Asayam, Horid Lahem Asamah, Hela Lahem Asabair, Yigit Lahem Asaslav, Yikifan Anani Akavad Ba'asa Asamishka. Look what Moshe Rabbeinu accomplished in the end. He takes them out of Mitzrayim. He splits the Yom Suf for them. He successfully brings the man down for them. He provides them with water. He then gives them meat. He gives them sustenance. He gives them everything. Now he says to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I've done everything you want me to do. I built a Mishkan. What's left? Can I now retire? HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, no. You think you're done? Amar lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu, look at the last line, Chayecha. I now have a job for you which is greater than anything else I've asked you to do until now, and that is now I need you to teach values to the Jewish people. Everything else was commentary. Now I have the most important job for you, and that is to teach values, Jewish experience. What does it mean, Tumah the Tahara? What does it mean to distinguish, to differentiate? What does it mean to live a life of self-control? What does it mean to live a life where I'm going to have both of these dreams of Yosef HaTzadik engaging at one time? Both of them clashing, Miksonis Kasim, the multifaceted life that we live. What does that look like? How am I supposed to do that? Where do I draw the line? How do I balance it? That, says HaKadosh Baruch Hu, is your most important job. And I think about this, because like Moshe Rabbeinu did for his people, we have the obligation to do for our families, and Amir Chosem, for your children as well. You're all going to have the opportunity and the challenge and the obligation to do all of the above for your children. Moshe Rabbeinu gave them the Anani Akavod. We give our children shelter and protection. Moshe Rabbeinu gave them man. We work hard in life to give our children food and to take care of them in that way. Moshe Rabbeinu made sure there was a be'er, there was water for them. We all make sure that our children are physically taken care of. But then HaKadosh Baruch Hu turns to us and he says, I have a greater task for all of you. That is more important than anything else I've spoken about before. And that is l'lamed l'b'ni tuma v'tahara. To take the responsibility to teach our children what it means to live a life experiencing Yiddishkeit. What does it mean to live a life with Shabbos being the center of our week? What does it mean to live life that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the focal point of everything that goes on in our lives? That is our primary responsibility, to teach our children to live both of those dreams. Both of those dreams of Yosef, the bundles of wheat, while at the same time, the Shemesh, the Areach, the Achanasar Kochavim, all of those can all blend into one wholesome, beautiful life that can be experienced as a practicing Jew. I believe it's what Avraham Avinu was told. The Jewish people are going to be, on the one hand, aspirational. Their minds are always going to be in heaven. They're always going to be looking upward into doing something great. While at the same time, they're going to accomplish so much of what goes on in our world. But they have to learn how to synthesize both of those. And Shabbos gives us the opportunity to do just that. There is a connection. We say it every Shabbos. Sheshes yamim talud ba'asisa kol melachtecha. Uvayom ha-shvi Shabbos la'Hashem Elokecha. There's a connection between the 6 days of work and the seventh day, which is Shabbos. Those all come together because that is the full package, the complete package of what it means to be a Jew. To be a person who understands that you have a right to be successful, you have a right to work, you have a right to enjoy, you have a right to take advantage of all the opportunities that the world gives us, while at the same time, always remaining aspirational. Always remaining a person who is focused on the kochavim, on the lofty ideals that Avraham Avinu spoke about, that Yosef dreamt about, and that Moshe Rabbeinu was tasked with in the end of his life, that after all that he accomplished, after all that he provided, after all that he did for the Jewish people, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says it's not enough. Your most important job is to teach the Jewish people how to take all those values, all those laws, all the intellect, and put it into the experience of the lives that they live. So,